Blog Talk Radio.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to the day after. I know everyone is sad. No, not because your team lost. No, not because the Patriots won. There will not be another meaningful football game in the NFL until September. Do you realize how long that is? What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Sports Cave with PLR. Welcome to the Cave Show with PLR. Hopefully everyone enjoyed a lackluster Super Bowl. We'll get into that. We'll get into McVay, and we'll get into Belichick and Brady and all that good stuff. I want to talk a little bit of trade, too. About Anthony Davis. So we're going to get into all this stuff. A lot of unpacking to do. Again, welcome to the Cave Show. This is PLR. We're brought to you by Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. Located Almond School in Chandler Heights, locally in Chandler, Arizona. Get in there, let them know PLR sent you. They can take 10% off any cigar purchase that you may have. They also now serve beer and wine, so you can sit back, relax, watch one of the mini televisions, get you a steak, and all that can be done at Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, 10% off of any cigar purchase that you may have. Again, just let them know the PLR from the Cave Show sent you. There are some restrictions. Reply. Check when you walk through the door. The one and only Ed Cole will be joining us really shortly. So if there are any callers, anybody want to get in, let's get you in now. Call in number 917-889-7828. All calls made via the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Look, go ahead and open this up, like I said, right now, because he's scheduled to call in real soon. It looks like I do have a caller on the line. Thank you for your patience. This is PLR and the Cave Show. Who do I suppose you're speaking to?
Good afternoon, Paul. It's Lou. Oh, boy, what a mess that Super Bowl was. Oof.
You weren't entertained, huh?
Not really. I expected a lot better than that.
You know what? I've heard that a lot today, Lou. Let me ask you a question. What do you think would have made the Super Bowl better for you?
I think more scoring, for one.
Yeah, I hear that.
The offense was weak. I mean, three quarters and no touchdowns.
Maybe the defense was just that good.
You know, if you look at it that way, yeah. But you expect, you know, two teams with a high-powered offense, you expect a little bit more. Nobody expected this.
And a lot of people made a lot of money on betting the under.
Yeah, I guess that's one good way to look at it.
So what did you think of the defense, though? I know offensively it wasn't what you were looking for, but were you pleased for a change? Watching the refs let defenses play and watching two defenses kind of stymie everything.
Well, if you like defense, you know, that was your game to see. But, you know, I'm more of an offensive type of guy.
I hear you.
I was disappointed by that.
Well, we shall see. We had 9 months to get ready for the start of the next season. And it starts all over again then.
Right. But, you know, I didn't think Dolph was... You know, I didn't think, you know, that Rams offense was going to hold up against, you know, the Patriots defense anyway. So I was right about that because their offense was terrible.
Well, yeah, Goff looked like a guy who is in his second full year, against a coach that was coaching in his ninth Super Bowl on the defensive side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in all honesty, that's basically what it looked like, because that's what it was. So, I mean, should we be surprised?
No, I guess we shouldn't, but a lot of people were.
Yeah, you give Belichick 2 weeks to get ready, and he's won more of these than he's lost, huh?
That's
he's not
sure.
6-3 in the Super Bowl for no reason. So, I just think this is what you get.
Yeah, and they're working on negotiations for Brady for another 3 years because he wants to play when he's 45.
You know what? You're starting to slowly see a little bit of decline, but they know that. So they have Sony Michel. They have a running game. You know, they can use Burkhead for a change of pace. Edelman is still running around, you know, out there. So, I don't know if he'll play till he's 45, but I definitely think he'll play till he's 42.
Yeah.
Sure. So, you know.
Yeah, he turns 45, this month?
You said 45, 41.
42, right? He turns it this month, right?
Okay, I thought it was 41, but yeah, it could be 42.
Yeah, he turns 42.
Well, like I said, it looks like he could play another year for sure. He doesn't look like he's falling off that cliff yet, so.
But how much money do you think he's got in him?
I'll use this as the example that I used before. Let's say Brady is the seventh best quarterback in the NFL. Do you think he's going to fall worse than top 10?
No.
If he's top 10, with Belichick, that defense, the pieces they'll put around him that work for him. He won the Super Bowl. So even if he falls off a little bit, it's not like he's fallen off to 3-13. Even if you fall off, you think that's still playoff with the opportunity. Plus, Lou, let's be honest with this. He isn't exactly playing in the toughest division.
No, he's not.
So, there's a lot to be said for that. You know, you're not exactly running out. You know, Patrick Mahomes every week for him to play. Drew Brees every week for him to play. You're running out Miami, who has no one to play quarterback. You're running out the Bills, whose rookie quarterback showed some promise. And you're rolling out the Jets, who have a good young quarterback who has nothing else. There's really no running game. There's really no – so you're about to get yet another coach. So if you're ever in a division – to stick around, why not?
Yeah, because basically the other three teams in the division are pathetic.
They got awful.
Yeah.
They got awful. So why wouldn't you stay? Why are you enticed to leave? Why are you enticed to walk away when you're so at the top of what you do? You're playing for a team.
Well, Paul, because sometimes it's best to go on top, you know?
Very rarely, though, do guys do that. You know what I mean?
I know.
You know, Peyton Manning went out on top. A couple other guys went out on top. Most guys don't go out on top. But we'll get into that more tomorrow. I got Ed calling in, my friend, so I will.
Okay.
I'm going to jump and take that. Hopefully you have a good rest of your day.
I will. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon. Always good to catch up with Lou, good friend of the program, online now. The biggest, you know what? I'm going to say this, and I want someone to challenge me and tell me who else it could be. The biggest sports personality in this state. There's no one that has his hands on more personalities in this state where you could find him more doing what he does so well than the man that's online right now. My partner, my brother in crime, the one and only Ed Cole. Ed, what's happening with you?
Hey, man, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, man. So, that's such an honor for you to say that, considering there's so much great talent here in Arizona on the microphone, man. For you to say that, I really take that's an honor. Thank you so much, man.
Truth is truth. I flipped the dial. I'm like, you know what? Let me check the weather real quick. Get a sports station. Like, is that Ed? Going on my way to work a game last week, flipping through. I'm like, wait a second. I know that voice. Of course, it's Ed. Everywhere. And that says a lot about not you as knowing sports, but you as a person that people constantly reach out. And when they want insight, they want it from a source that they know is good. They want it from a person they know is honest. And they dial this number and get you. And, man, that's good stuff, bro.
Appreciate that, sir. Thank you.
No doubt. Let's jump in and let's talk about this Super Bowl. And everyone's great. Here's what I don't understand about fans. All year long, all I heard was defenses. No one can play defense anymore. Can't touch nobody. You can't tackle. You can't hit nobody. Yada, yada, yada. Then we get the top game of the year, the biggest football game of the year, and they let them play defense. And then what do I hear? Oh, man, that game was boring as heck. Wasn't enough points scored. How do you get people satisfied, Ed? How do you do it?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, 13-3, the lowest scoring game in Super Bowl history. But to me, like Tony Romo said in the broadcast last night before halftime, if you were a fan of offense, then this game was not for you. However, if you were a fan of defense, then this is right down your alley. And as much as I love offense, I love defense. And what the Patriots did last night to a team that averaged 33 points per game during the regular season, holding them 30 points season average per game. I mean, that was just a remarkable defensive performance from the front seven to the back four. You know, I mean, their defense is stellar, especially that secondary. Stephon Gilmore, one of the best defensive backs in football. They lost Patrick Chung. He broke his right arm, but still, they never missed a beat, Paul. After Chung went out, you got the McCourty brothers coming in there. Those guys played so well. I mean, it's just top to bottom. That defense had everything going last night, and they could totally throw Jared Goff and his guys off. You texted, we were texting during the game, how you said he looked like a deer in headlights. He absolutely looked like a deer in headlights. He was hard last night, and that was because of the scheme that the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick, the defensive guru himself, they drew up last night. It was a perfect game plan, holding the Los Angeles Rams to 260 yards of offense. Oh my gosh, that's incredible! What a great defensive performance and great play calling and great scheme and just a great game plan by the Patriots to get their sixth championship.
I agree with you, but you know I don't want to slight the Rams either though. That defense did an outstanding job, and I think where they deserve a lot of credit too is their offense was anemic. So unlike the Patriots defense, who at least got a chance to rest. Didn't rest at all. And to not give up a touchdown until that very late touchdown, I think is a testament to how well their defense overall played also.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Rams, I mean, they were up for the task as well. Like you said, defensively, yes, Julian Edelman went off the Super Bowl MVP, 10 catches for 141 yards. But it's hard to cover that guy. And Romo, again, talked about it on the broadcast last night. You can double team this guy, but he's still going to find a way to get open. He's going to find a way to get over the middle. He's going to find a way to get toward the sideline, get free so Tom Brady can hit him, which he did 10 out of 12 times last night. But Sonny Michel had a great game last night. It took him a while to get those 94 yards. He had that 126-yarder in the second half, and, of course, the game-sealing touchdown in the second half as well. But the Rams, their defense was up to the task. It was just their offense just wasn't able to match wits with him and stay along with him.
I'm the Gary Lackey Law Line, the one, the only, Ed Cole. Ed, okay, so here's why I think people got bored, and I'll say this in terms of the defense. When you watch a defense, and I'll use my team, the Bears, as an example. When you're watching Khalil Mack sack quarterbacks and quarterbacks running for their lives, and these guys are pushing the pocket and they're hitting the quarterback over and over, I think defensively that's what gets people excited in terms of defensive game. But when you're just three plays in front, and you're not really hitting anyone, you're not really sacking anyone consistently on both sides, I think honestly maybe that's where some people found it boring. Not that it wasn't good, but I think that's where they may have found it boring because no one was getting crushed playing defense.
Yeah, that's how you look at it. But still, me, I was riveted. Even though you look at the Rams, 8 straight possessions, their first 8 possessions, they punt the ball away. But again, still, as much as people do not like the Patriots, you have to respect exactly what they did last night. They had a week to game plan for this, and you know you can give Bill Belichick, give him a week. You can give this guy 7 minutes, and he can game plan for a football team. But give that guy a week, and he will absolutely turn the Rams inside out, which they did last night. It was just, I think it was a work of art, and I was so impressed by the Patriots. And I love a dynasty. I talked about it all during the week on all these radio shows, and we talked about it last week, and we're talking about it right now. I love the Patriots, and I love what they do. And this is something that we will never see again, Paul. 6 championships out of 9 appearances. Name the next time in the next few generations when this will happen again. I don't see it happening. This is almost impossible to recreate.
You know what? Is it fair to say, and I'm going to call modern football, you know, so I want to say 1970 and forward. Is it fair to say there's really only been 3 dynasties? Not saying there hasn't been a stretch of good teams, but is it fair to say the 70s Steelers, the 80s Niners,
the Niners,
because of what they did,
90s Cowboys,
and then 90s Cowboys, and now the Patriots are really truly the only 4 teams that you could really say had a dynasty?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Redskins had their 3 championships, and they could also be considered a dynasty, even though it extended out a little bit longer. But when you look at the Steelers, 6 championships, and you look at the Patriots, 6 titles, and then you look at the titles, like we said, the 49ers got, and the Cowboys got, and the Green Bay Packers got their championships. I think they have 3 or 4 as well, but I don't know if you consider them a dynasty. I wouldn't consider that,
No, I just considered it, you know, they won, obviously, the 2 to start, and that's why I said I want to jump to 1970 and on. I mean, there are teams that got there. Like, the Broncos got 2, but they definitely won a dynasty of that era, you know what I mean? Because in the 70s, Pittsburgh got 2, and then it was, like, 2 years in between, and they came back and got 2 more, all within the same decade. The Niners got 4, all within the same decade. You know, so that's what I'm considering a dynasty. Like, in basketball right now, Golden State Warriors are considered a dynasty. You get 3 out of 4, you're a dynasty at that point. So I hesitate to look at some other teams, but I think what makes this dynasty so much more impressive is because this dynasty started in 2002. So they were technically a dynasty from 2002 to 2010, and now they're a dynasty again from 2011 to 2020. That's incredible.
It is. For like you said, I'm just looking on Pro Football Reference. It started February 3rd, 2002 against the St. Louis Rams in the Superdome. 20-17, that victory in Super Bowl 36. And now we're talking Super Bowl 53. They've got their 6th championship. I mean, that's just an amazing accomplishment by one organization that is the model standard. They are the gold standard by which all franchises should be met. Now, ideally, you know, you don't want to pattern yourself after everything the New England Patriots do, because not everything they do is perfect. But when it comes down to it, when it comes down to winning championships, yes, that's what you pattern yourself after, because every team wants to get championships like the Patriots do. That's what you're in the business for.
On the Kerry Lackey Law Line, the one, the only top sports personality, Ed Cole. After the game, I heard McVay say, "This is on me. I was flat out outcoached. There's no excuse." He said, "I feel numb. This is going to stick with me for a while." When I look at that, I think there's a certain amount that I heard people say he should have been ready for. But you know what? He could talk to Jared Goff for a while in his ear. But at some point, it's up to Jared Goff. Patriots disguised everything so well in terms of they looked like they were going to blitz and they didn't. They looked like they were blitzed in this gap, but they actually blitzed in this gap. They looked like 4 guys were coming, and then 5 guys came. There was always something that they were in your mind. Who should take this one? Not that anyone is to fault, because it's a team, but would this be more on the coach or more on the quarterback?
I think everybody shares equal blame. Like you said, it's not Sean McVay didn't go out there. He wasn't one of 53 players that went out there and played last night. He didn't play offense. He didn't play defense. He and his staff schemed up as well as they could, and I know they did. You know Sean McVay is a master technician. He as well as he could over that entire week they were in Atlanta getting ready for the Patriots, but there's only so much you can scheme up for, Paul, because you know Belichick has got all these different things that he's holding back that Sean McVay has never seen before, like what they saw last night. That's something that the Rams never probably saw when they were watching film on the Patriots. They sit there, and Belichick is sitting there thinking, okay, so Coach McVay is looking at all of our game film. I'm sure he's looking at that Chiefs game. I'm sure he's looking at that Chargers game. I'm sure he's looking at the other 16 games before the playoffs. What new wrinkles can we put in our mix that he's never seen before, which they brought out last night? And that's why they were 3-for-13 on third downs, 260 yards of offense. Todd Gurley was in and out. He was total non-factor, 45 yards rushing. 26 of it was on one run, so 9 rushes for 19 yards. They totally took Todd Gurley out of the game. C.J. Anderson was a non-factor. Their winning game, 62 yards total. I mean, just they took it out defensively, and, yes, they overcame that interception, that very first interception on the first throw from Tom Brady. They overcame a Gostkowski missed field goal and a punt. So their first three possessions, they got nothing, the Patriots. But still, they stayed the course because they've been here before. Every single Super Bowl they've been in before that was decided by 8 points or less. So they're like, you know what? This is a familiar situation for us in a title game. So, okay, we just stay the course, and then all of a sudden we know King Tom will take over.
Go in the first quarter anyway. Don't matter. Like,
yeah.
They never scored in the first quarter
in the Super Bowl.
No.
Right?
What did my man say, and let's do it again, and I want you out of New Orleans? I never liked New Orleans, no how. Tommy, we don't score in the first quarter anyway. Don't make no difference.
Oh my gosh! But you know, it's just an incredible way the Patriots run their system. They call it the Patriot way, and that's how it rolls. You get a guy like Gronkowski and James Devlin blocking down there in the red zone. Once they finally get in the red zone, opening a hole for Sony Michel to run through. Guys just are so selfless. They just throw themselves. Their offensive line was magnificent last night. Tom Brady was relatively untouched last night. And then that allowed Sony Michel. He started revving up. You saw Michel in that second half. He started revving up. The guy had 6 touchdowns in the postseason, a rookie record, Paul. Give credit to that offensive line. Notwithstanding what Michel can do with his talents, the guy is supremely talented. He's a bulldog. He came from Athens, so they produce running backs down in Athens, Georgia. So, but the fact that he's got a great offensive line and they can call plays for that and let Sony Michel do what he did in his rookie season, it's just it all comes down to the way the Patriots run it, and that organization is just an outstanding organization, and that's why they've won 6 titles.
How many days do we wait before we hear what was really wrong with Todd Gurley? Is it next week that something comes out that there was an ailment, something nagging him, or to avoid getting fined but for not disclosing an injury, do we get it with the Todd Gurley was fined during the Super Bowl, but he's just going to go in and get his knee cleaned up a little bit from the season? Do you think something like that's going to come in the offseason?
I'm sure it will. And Coach McVay talked about it last night. He basically chalked it up to there just wasn't opportunities for Gurley to do anything because, again, we go back to what the Patriots schemed up defensively against the Los Angeles Rams to totally eliminate and take out Todd Gurley because they knew this guy ran for almost 1,300 yards in the regular season. This guy is an absolute dynamo. So they knew probably their number one game plan was to eliminate Todd Gurley, take him out of the equation, and that makes the Rams so much more one-dimensional because now you don't have your guy coming out of the backfield. He's not running the ball. He's not catching passes. He's not catching sweep passes or running wheel routes or whatever they call up for Todd Gurley. They know he's out of the picture. And there were reports. I think Evan Washburn was talking last night about how Gurley was on the sidelines he was on the sidelines stretching and riding a bike. Or maybe it was Tracy Wolfson said it, but they were talking about how Gurley was on the sidelines, and they speculated maybe something is wrong with his knee. Maybe something with his knee did flare up. But I guess it'll come out over time, and Gurley kept saying, yeah, my knee was fine. I had no issues physically. I think it was just the way the Patriots schemed against Todd Gurley.
I hear you, but I'm not buying that one. Not from you, from the Rams. I'm not buying that. You know what? If this is your horse has to get more than 10 touches. I mean, we've seen Gurley dominate a game running. We've seen Gurley dominate a game receiving. I don't remember them calling one screen pass to Gurley, one wheel route to Gurley, one dump off. They had the one little dump off check down. That's it. Look, if they're stopping him from running, we see this with good backs all the time, the real good backs in the NFL. We've seen Le'Veon Bell, so maybe they stop him for two or three quarters, but they just keep feeding him and when he played, and he finally got hot. We see this with Zeke down in Dallas. You keep feeding them, eventually you wear them down, and they get hot because you're going to throw these little dump passes and screen passes. For them to do absolutely nothing to stretch him out, I don't buy that he's healthy. And McVay is known as an offensive guru. He didn't have one screenplay for Gurley? Not one? Not one real route? Not one? Something don't smell right. I'm from the west side of Chicago. I can smell a pig from a mile away. Something ain't right.
No. And I correct myself. Just looking at the numbers, my numbers were even – I was even more better. I was even more giving when I gave Todd Gurley 45 yards. He actually had 10 rushes for 35 yards, Paul, with a long of 16. So, again, so that's 9 rushes for 19 yards, and then he only gets 2 targets, like you said, and he caught one for minus 1 yards. For him to only get 12 targets in the biggest game of his life, whatever might have been going on with him physically, you got to suck that up. If you're Sean McVay, you throw Todd Gurley out there as much as possible, because today was their tomorrow. If they lost, which they did last night, there is no tomorrow. So their tomorrow has come to fruition. You got to use Todd Gurley. They had Sony Michel 18 rushes. He got targeted 2 times in the receiving, didn't catch anything, but Michelle had 18 rushes for 94 yards. So they stayed strong with the run, 32 rushes for 154 yards. They threw Michelle, Burkhead, Edelman had one run for 8 yards, Cordarrelle Patterson had 2 rushes for 7, James White had 2 for 4. So they mixed their running game in so well. But, yeah, it was so disappointing to see Gurley in and out, and they had shots of him on the sidelines. I'm just like, oh, my gosh, you got such a supreme talent, and Todd Gurley sitting on the sidelines. You've got a Ferrari on the sidelines, and you don't rev him up and put him out there?
And as one great poet named Keith Sweat once said, something, 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 something
just ain't
right. So, hey, listen, on the line, Kerry Lackey, all line, the one, only, Ed Cole. I want to switch up real quick. Rarely have we seen basketball be able to garner any attention during Super Bowl week. But when Anthony Davis is the subject of trade rumors, it interrupts the Super Bowl week. Where does he end up? Ed, is it just inevitable? Are we just throwing water in the wind because we know eventually the Lakers are going to find a way to get him there?
I think so. I mean, it depends on what GM Demps does for the New Orleans Pelicans. Is he patient enough to wait until the summer and see what the Boston Celtics can offer him? Even though I'm looking on ESPN, it says the Lakers improved their offer for Anthony Davis, but evidently it looks like the first offer that they offered him, Dell Demps was like, no, that's not enough. That's not good. We don't want that. That's not enough. So it looks like, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, the latest offer includes multiple young players, multiple draft picks, and salary cap relief for New Orleans. So I'm sure that piques Dell Demps' interest. So it all depends on – because we have until Thursday. I'm sure Magic Johnson's going to pull something together, and I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled off a major deal like this to get Anthony Davis before the trade deadline or on the trade deadline, and which will make the Celtics upset and other teams. But, hey, you know, that's the way the trade deadline, and that's the way situations work out. If the Lakers can pull it, then more power to them.
I heard a rumor, and I don't know if it has any legs, that Milwaukee is interested in jumping in on this. And so I'm going to ask you this question.
And the Clippers.
Do you think?
I see that too.
And the Clippers. But do you think, in terms of the opportunity to win a title quicker, do you think that he would stand a better chance of winning a title with a young freak and some of the young talent they still have around, or going to Lakers and playing with LeBron, who, in all honesty, like I said, will lose a whole bunch of talent just to bring him there? They're going to, you know, gut the cupboard just to bring him. Where do you think he actually stands a better chance?
Honestly, if he stays in L.A., he's got a better chance with the Clippers than he does with the Lakers.
No,
because
if
the Lakers gut their multiple young players, which they talk about, which would probably be Ingram, Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, you know, and everybody else on that staff, then what do you have left to work with?
And that's why
really?
I'm doing the Bucks, because the Bucks are on that list. Do you think that would be the best opportunity for him to go there as opposed to anywhere, even the Clippers? Because the Clippers are going to have to give up something no matter what. The Bucks, you know, they're not giving up freak, and you know they're going to still have maybe a Chris Middleton. They just have some picks
mm-hmm.
and some other stuff. Something
yeah,
tells me that if I'm AD, I'd rather go there.
Yeah, I'd rather go to Milwaukee too. You know, right now 38-13, they're 5.5 games ahead in the Central Division over Indiana. So, you know, the future is bright. The now is bright for the Milwaukee Bucks. So, yeah, why not go to a team that's 25 games over 500 who has a legitimate shot of winning a world title that can come out of the Eastern Conference? And let's see. If they add Anthony Davis, I would think they'd be immediate contenders. Do you think they could hang with Golden State in the finals?
I think right now, as Milwaukee's constructed, they could push Golden State to 6. I think with Anthony Davis, they could possibly push him to 7, because what do you do with the freaking Davis? Like, what do you do? I mean, who do you – look, I understand LeBron is LeBron, and I understand he's the best player in the game today. But I will say this. He's not the greatest consistent player in the game today, because at his age, in fairness to him, how could he be? He's played 16 NBA seasons. With all the playoff games, he's played almost 19 full NBA seasons. And Charles Barkley said the best, I don't care who you are, Father Time comes knocking at your door eventually. And we see that because
yes,
he's been out longer than he's ever been out. He rested against Golden State the other night, so that way they don't overwork him. And I just don't see, you know, maybe come playoffs with the right rest, he'll be ready to go. But even when he played last year in the playoffs against Golden State, after the first game, he didn't have a great second game. And I love it when people throw stats at me. And, Ed, you know this from covering sports. Great players can get stats without playing a great game. And he didn't play 3 more great games. He played like another game and a half of a really good game. And so there's a difference. And I'm really worried about the Lakers in terms of, not that they're my team, Lori, but worried about when you signed LeBron, you basically said, we need to win now within the next 3 to 4 years. But to get him the help that we need to get rid of all our young talent. So it's basically win or nothing. And the way the NBA is constructed right now, I don't think there's enough gap out there between them and everyone else that just by adding him like you did in Miami, that puts you over the top. So AD coming or not, I don't think it pushes them where they want to be. And they now have no future. In 4 years, they have nothing. They're literally starting all over again.
Yeah, because if you get Davis, like you said, that's going to clear out those young players, some draft picks, and that's really going to benefit New Orleans. But you know, even with the comments that LeBron said about Kyrie Irving this week about, yeah, I love the way the young man's playing. I love the way he's growing. And I don't know if that was a kind of a little slight, like, okay, Kyrie, okay, I respect you, dude. I know you're a free agent coming up here. You hear these words I'm saying about you? Could you think about coming to the Lakers? So even if it is Kyrie, even if they do get AD and LeBron, what else are they going to surround them with if they got rid of all these young players? I know with those three, a lot of other free agents will want to come to play for the Lakers, but we will have to see how that team will be constructed if they land whoever they want to land free agency wise and who they get through the draft, and if they keep some of their young players, are those guys going to be able to gel with an AD, a Kyrie, and a LeBron? If it's those three, those big three that stay in LA, and how will that chemistry work together? How will that dynamic work in Los Angeles? But, I mean, we don't know. We won't know until Thursday and then possibly into the future once Kyrie becomes a free agent or whatever free agents do come to L.A.
Okay, I got to do it, Ed. I got to do it.
This is Elio Cobo with the Phoenix Suns, and I'm in the cave with PLR.
That's our lead-in to talk about the Suns. So.
Okay.
Okay, so. Every time I start, I'm almost speechless when I start. So the Suns are, I don't know what they're going to do in terms of trade deadline. They're obviously not going to be buyers, so they're more than likely going to be sellers. Do you, Ed Cole, who's here courtesy of the Kerry Lackey Law Line, do you think the Suns are going to try to move anybody? And do you think that there are possibilities that they can be one of those third teams that get in and help facilitate a deal to send AD to LA?
Possibly. Man, I read some crazy report on one of the on a website in the UK that the Suns were involved in that trade and that Lonzo Ball was coming to the Suns. And I think ArizonaSports.com had it on their site before they pulled that down about Lonzo Ball coming to the Suns. So I think they could be a major player. But at this point, they're 54 games into the season, Paul. It's like, it's way too late to find a point guard. I mean, you got 28 games left in the season. What do you have? I mean, you could find a guy that would want to stay here for 28 games and see if he would want to extend himself beyond that. But I mean, it's way past the lost cause to try to find a point guard right now. So do you just roll with what you have right now? And I saw something on ValleyOfTheSun.com about possibly. Could Devin Booker be on the trade deadline? That was kind of a crazy article to read about that. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. But could you ever envision something where Devin Booker could get moved?
They told me that was the most ludicrous thing ever that happened because he is by far the face. He just re-signed for 5 years.
Sure.
So to move him now would be the exact words I got. Would be the dumbest thing that could happen to Phoenix in a long time. So I don't think he's on the move.
But, you know, it would be typical of what Robert Sarver and the Suns would do.
No, you know what? This one, I don't even think they would do that one, to be honest with you. Now, I do think that they would facilitate to bring I honestly could see, not that I believe, but I could see Lonzo Ball coming here. And it has nothing to do with point guards for now. And more has to do with point guards for the future because – he's still under team control for two more years. So you have a point guard no matter what for 2 years. And then the Suns would then be able to offer him more money than anybody else. And usually rookies don't bolt after that. So I could see that. I honestly could see that happening. And like you said, they're 54 games in, they're 11-40 tonight. And in all honesty, they're just playing out the string. But I just had to ask you that. And like I said, we have our Elio Cobo when it's time to talk about them. So I had to play that. Ed, just so you know, I'm still on cloud nine.
And then, Paul, you think from a free agent standpoint, who would want to come here for 28 games knowing that you're coming into a dead-end situation with the Phoenix Suns? A team, like you said, is 32 games under 500.
Yep. I think Lonzo Ball would really. And because he is on his first contract, and he could have two more years on that deal. And pretty much washed away this year anyway. And we've seen already in L.A. that the him and LeBron thing just is not going to underworks with LeBron because he's a veteran. He knows how to play with a guy like LeBron. Lonzo, the one thing that we can always say about LeBron James at this stage of his career, more than anything, he is not a good player to play with young guys. It just doesn't work. Young guys do not develop playing beside LeBron James. They just don't. He plays better with veterans that have already developed. He knows habits. He knows all that. Young players are too – they can be inconsistent. And so I could see a Ball wanting to – get out of L.A., especially his personality doesn't strike – well, not his, I should say. The Ball name personality doesn't strike me as one that's happy sitting around waiting to know if they're going to be traded or not. So I don't know. I don't know. On the Terry Lacula line, the one, the only, Ed Cole. Ed, so last week you were sitting on another different radio show right before ASU took on the Junior College of Arizona, known as the U of A. And I don't know if you heard this. I don't know if you heard this story or not, and it is true. Zylan Cheatham said it after the win that Bobby Hurley, before a shoot around, literally came out and ran suicides.
Yes.
For all the
he ran suicides
that ASU, that ASU had lost to U of A since he's been there, and he said today is the last day that I'm running. Do you think, and I'm not talking for the next 5-10 years, but for right now, do you think that ASU is operating better than the Junior College of Arizona, known as U of A, down in Tucson, basketball wise?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they took them to overtime the other night, 1-7 in Tempe, a game that you attended and that you covered so magnificently, might I add.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. But, you know, just looking at the standings, they're tied with Oregon State and USC for second in the Pac-12 conference behind Washington, who's 9-0. So for ASU to be 6-3 at this point, they've had their ups and downs. They've had their little strings of losses. They had a couple losing streaks. But for them to be right where they are right now at 15-6, edge over Arizona with the head-to-head right now, yeah, I think they're clearly operating better than Arizona. But what they need to do is continue to build on that. And that starts with Washington State on February 7th.
Yep.
And that's a team that they should beat because Washington State has lost 8 out of 9 in the Pac-12. They're playing them in Tempe. That Washington State is 8-14. So you and I, Paul, we all know this, and our listeners know. You play who's on the schedule, and you should beat who's not superior to you, which is clearly the Washington State Cougars.
You know who'll be at that game on Thursday, right? Give you 3 guesses.
You.
yeah, all three. The same person will be at the game tonight. Watching, you know, covering those Suns play the Rockets. I tell you what, though, this is a fun time of year, and people don't understand. We have an advantage covering sports in Phoenix that other teams don't. And I'm not talking about the tradition of New York and Philly and Chicago and Boston and L.A. I'm not talking that. But very rarely do you have a city where football finishes, you have a top Division I program at ASU, you have an NFL team with the Cardinals, you have the Suns, you have ASU basketball, you have the Diamondbacks spring training is about to start, not only for them, but a slew of teams that are going to be down here. You have the hot shots in the AAF that's just about getting started. The Open just ended. And very rarely do you have that much, and the Rattlers are about to – arena football, they're about to start. I got my info. The WNBA Mercury just re-signed Brianna January, and it's there's not too many cities where you get that much going on, and I don't think people understand just how fortunate we are to be able to cover all of this stuff.
Yeah, and going back to the Suns, with the Sun Devil coming tonight, coming off a 43-point game, his 26th straight 30-point plus game, if I'm correct, Paul, the Sun Devil coming to town tonight, the Beard.
Yeah. The Beard.
See, I would like to see another performance like the Suns did against Atlanta. Yes, they were out rebounded by 16, but still, you saw Mikal Bridges had a good game with 20, Josh Jackson had 25, DeAndre Ayton came back, didn't shoot that well, 5-15, but he had 13 points, 11 rebounds. Okobo had 11 assists. Devin Booker had 32. Kelly Oubre had 11 off the bench. So I want to see that kind of energy. I want to see that kind of effort and output tonight, hopefully. And, you know, notwithstanding what James Harden is going to do tonight, because, you know, he's going to go off, he's going to get his 30-plus. But if they can play consistent basketball like that, where everybody contributes, then maybe they can pull off an upset tonight. I would love to see them come and get a victory tonight at Talking Stick Resort Arena and actually make the fans feel good about leaving the arena for once.
I know, because, you know, you're right. The effort was there for the most part against Atlanta, but you just can't lose to Atlanta at home. It is just there's no way. And you just
not to
can't
a team
lose
that
game.
That's only won 9 out of 31 road games. You cannot lose
yeah.
to a team that's 17-35 at home.
Yeah, I honestly, out of all their losses this year, and I know there's has been games where they got bad starts and they had this and they had that, losses of the year. Not because, you know, people always consider loss bad losses, losing by 20 or losing by 30. Or, that's not always a bad loss depending on who you're playing, is back-to-back,
mm-hmm.
what you're coming off, what they're coming. But when you lose to a team as bad as the Hawks at home this time of the year where they're not really playing for anything either, I just
yeah.
–
and a game that you led going into the fourth quarter too, Paul.
Yeah, I just think that's a bad, bad loss. And so much coming up, though, bro. I'm really excited. I'm excited for the Hoops All-Star game, just so you know. Mike Malone will be the head coach, Denver Nuggets head coach. He'll be coaching the Team LeBron side in the All-Star game. So that guy has had an amazing season in Denver.
And he has, and so has Mike Budenholzer. He's done a fantastic job in Milwaukee.
And he really has. He really has. And Ed, just one last question, we're going to jump out of here. Is there any team, after watching the Warriors play over the last couple weeks, integrating Boogie in, and he doesn't even have his legs right yet, is there a team that can beat them 4 times in 2 weeks?
No. No.
The fact that you said that
and you say that Boogie still hasn't gotten his legs underneath him. He still doesn't have his basketball legs, but yet he goes out against the Lakers and gets 18-10. Still, come on.
It's gonna be really is just gonna be unfair. And can you get them once? You can get anybody once. Can you get them twice? Maybe so. But have you noticed, like I said, LeBron is the best, most talented player in the NBA. But I will go down in saying this. Over the last 4 years, I have not seen anybody that makes playing with him easier and is unselfish as a superstar than Steph Curry, and how he pipers that whole situation. No one complains about touches. No one complains about anything. There would be teams where your point guard would pull up from 35 feet and you would get frustrated. Never on that team. When he's not there, the team looks beatable. When he's not there, you get bickering. When he shows up, the bickering goes away, better on the court. Everyone's shots look better. Everyone gets better shots. The ball never sticks. Honestly, he might be, in my opinion, right now, the best, not the best talent ball player, but the best player to allow everyone to have their talent not held. You don't lose your talent by playing with Steph. It only helps you. As a superstar in the league today, I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Because it's not just on the court. It's, do you remember Durant and Draymond bickering back and forth? Steph was out. What do the Warriors do? They say, hey, Steph, man, hey, I know you're injured, but you got to travel with the team, bro. Yeah, you can't. You got to come travel with the team. All of a sudden, he starts traveling with the team. The bickering stops. I think those are the little things that no one really notices that makes him who he is. And what makes the Warriors who they are. And as long as he's healthy, man, and he's given up the rock and there's low usage rate on that team, I don't see anyone beating them 5 out of 7. They're getting 4 out of 7. They're getting hot now. It's almost unfair. Not that they have all this talent, but they play so well together. You know what it's like? The seniors are playing the 8th graders when they roll out. You roll out your seniors, they're rolling out the eighth. Or do you remember back in high school when the varsity team would play the teachers and the teachers would come out and the one teacher that had put on 40 pounds in the last 3 years, but he could still hit shots you think he could play, or he think he could play, and they look up and they try to chase down these seniors
who are dunking on him. That's what it feels like when you watch a fully healthy Warriors team play the rest of the NBA. And tell them what you got going on, bro. I know you got so much going on. What you got going on?
Oh, man, just hit me up on Twitter at EdCole43. And, man, it was as always, great to talk to you. But going back to the Warriors just real quick, I just look at their box score, and it just says it's the little things, like you said, the little things they do well. Like they were 18 of 19 from the free throw line against the Los Angeles Lakers. Steph didn't shoot his best from three-point range, but still, he was still a plus 13. So even though he wasn't hitting usually 5 of 15, he was still plus 13. That means he was distributing the ball, and when he was out there, positive things were happening. He might have only had 14 points, but still, the fact that it just like you said, his mere presence in 33 minutes gave him a plus 13. That's just extremely impressive.
Looking at that box score, what did Clay shoot? Just so everyone can understand,
10 of 15.
What was he? 10 of 15. Mm-hmm. What was he from the 3-point line?
10 of 15. 4-7.
10 of 15. Mm-hmm. He's well over. He's 75% from the field, and he's 62% from the 3-point line. Okay.
Yeah.
How many assists did the Warriors have that game? If you're looking at it,
31.
How many assists they had? How many? And how many turnovers did they have?
Turnover 10. So that's a 3-1 turnover ratio. 3-1. Yeah, and KD. KD, it's like a diagonal. It's like a diagonal puzzle. Klay went 10 of 15. Steph plus 13. DeMarcus Cousins 10 rebounds. And then you look at KD. Oh, 11 assists. Oh, Draymond Green 7 assists. Huh. Okay. And then down on the bench, you see Andre Iguodala 7 of 9 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3-point range, 4 assists in 26 minutes, plus 23 in 26 minutes. They're pretty much unstoppable. Unless they're all sick or their shots aren't falling or they forget the assists, they forget how to pass the ball off to each other, they're unstoppable.
You know, I say this the best all the time. The best way to beat them is to give them the wrong start time for the game.
Or tell them the wrong arena to show up to.
So that's the only way you're getting
there. We're supposed to be in L.A.? Oh, why are we still here at our arena? Oh, let's get on the play. Oh, man, the game already started. Oh, man, we missed it.
That's the only way. That is the only way. So, bro, man, I appreciate you so much. You know that.
Yes, sir.
Anytime I can spend time.
Of course.
Anyhow, as you always send me that text, you know how we do. That's the Ed Cole quote. You know how we do.
Of course. Oh,
so
here's a quick question for you. So for you and Martin, what was your favorite Otis the security guard moment? I got mine.
Oh, you know what? When he was the security guard on set at the Varnell Hill show.
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson and the fake
I'm
Michael Jackson.
I'm going on the Varnell Hill show.
I'm going on the Varnell Hill show. That was my favorite. I think that one and the one when he was in the drugstore. And he called my man a young whippersnapper. I think those are the ones.
Yeah.
What
my
about
favorite
you?
My favorite was the one in the shoe store. When the kid tried to go past the old people, he's like, ladies and gentlemen, this kid don't have no home training.
That was the one. When Gina was when Martin thought Gina's friend was trying to push up on her, but he was really trying to push up on Pam. That was one of the funniest things.
He came in the store and then the dude was sitting there with all those magazines. Read the magazine.
He tried to take one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that.
He said, Don't do that. I've been here 12 hours straight and I'm ready to snap.
And to be honest, we all have ended up in the shoe store at some point in time.
Yes.
So.
Oh
yeah, man.
Gosh. That was before the cell phone craze. Otherwise, he would have had a cell phone in his hands.
Oh yeah, playing Mario Brothers or something on his phone.
Yep.
You know, Angry Birds 2.
Yeah,
that's what you
got to
do.
Mind occupied. Yep.
Yep. That's the one, man. That's a good one. Oh, and just real quick, I'm not going to mention names, but it's funny how at the ASU game last Thursday, the big game on the four letter and they're playing the in-state rival, I saw some faces that I never see at games. Isn't that amazing?
Huh.
I saw a bunch of faces. I was looking down at the press row and I was like, huh, a bunch of people I ain't seen. But you know what? They come out and they cover the big ones. And as long as ASU is getting the pub, you know what? Let's do it. In fact, Ed, I'm going to say it now, and I know you probably won't believe me when I say it, but I think I might make the trip down to Tucson to cover the game this year because it's a lot easier drive when you drive back after a W.
Of course, yeah. Plus, I mean, that atmosphere down there, it's electric. It's a great arena down there. I know you'll never claim that it's a great arena, but it is. It's a great atmosphere for college basketball. And what better way for you to travel down to Tucson than to see a win over the Wildcats, and they go 2-0 against them.
They have electricity? You said electric. I thought they played with a couple guys shooting their headlights through, like, an opening.
Into
in the
arena?
No, they have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they have power down there in Tucson. Yeah, they have lights down there.
They do?
Yeah, you can actually plug your laptop in there once you get to center, once you get to the press row, right there on the court. Yeah, you can plug in, and they actually have internet there, so you can actually follow your story from Tucson. Yes,
it's amazing that with all those dirt roads, they could find internet.
And they have running water. They have bottled water down there. They have food down there. They'll have a meal for you in the press area.
Huh? Tucson has grown a lot.
Yeah, it has.
Grown a whole lot. Bro, I appreciate you, man. Let me get out of here. You know what that music means. We up against it now.
Yes, sir. Thanks again for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
No, man, it was fun. I appreciate you. And we'll catch up. I'm sure later on today I'll be getting a text from you when the game is on.
Of course. Yes, sir. Thank you again.
All right, brother, I'll catch up with you. That's the one and only Echo called in via the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook fan page at Sports Cave, Cave Guards with K. Make sure you're getting us at thesportscave.com, again, Cave Guards with the K. And you get me on the Twitter at PLR on Sports. I have a couple of special guests coming on this week. I have a guest host. Stay tuned tomorrow. I'll let you know if we go UFC Wednesday this week. Let you know that for sure tomorrow. Until next time, thank you. We're going to touch on the Super Bowl just a little bit more to clean it up tomorrow. But it's on to talking baseball and spring training. Until tomorrow, this has been the K-Show. This is PLR. Everyone have a great rest of your Monday.